Welcome to the Tate Talks podcast.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs.
Hi everyone, welcome once again to Tate Talks. I do really appreciate you listening. And today we have a great episode with Danny Boyle, who is the author of Sell More, Do Less, an MSP and IT specialist's guide to better sales calls. We spoke about the book, we spoke about all kinds of different MSP topics, and I really hope you enjoy the episode. Right. Hi, Danny. Thanks so much for joining us today on Tate Talks. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you, Chris. Pleasure to be here. I'm doing really good. Just got back from holiday, so it's nice to be back in the UK.
I almost believe that. So, well, it's great to have you. And I'm really looking forward to today's, because today's is a little bit different to most of the episodes that I do, which we're going to learn more about you and what you're up to. But then we're also going to talk about a book that you've written, which I'm really excited about, and it makes me feel like almost like a proper sort of talk show host. I've got someone on plugging a book, and I'm sort of asking questions. So this is a first to me. We'll see how it goes. So before we get to the book part, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself? Any interesting fun facts or snippets that people probably don't know about you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Danny Boyle. I've been in the MSP industry now for about 9 years. I first started my job working for a company called Zsphere, which was organized and looked after by one of my biggest mentors called Rick Yates. That was when I started to dip my toes really into the MSP and SaaS pool. And from there, I've been working with MSPs for many, many years, representing two different distributors. And I'm now looking after the larger audience of the Ninja One portfolio as well. So it's been quite a nice journey. Prior to that point, I worked in telecoms for over 6 or 7 years. Helping to mentor and coach others when it comes to over-the-phone selling. And prior to that, I dipped my toes into even a retail world as well. So I know a little bit more about face-to-face as well. When it comes to interesting facts, to be honest, most people know the one that I'm known for, which is on LinkedIn. I like to do dad jokes. I've been doing it for a few years amongst a few other people. I just like breaking up the piece a little bit and just changing the mold. So I've been doing that for many years. And also as well, I like to do a bit of golf in my spare time whenever the weather allows me to, should I say.
Cool. Yeah. And I love seeing the dad jokes on LinkedIn. And people that buy the book will be pleasantly surprised, as I was, to find that there seems to be a little bonus dad joke at the beginning of each chapter, which is good fun. So thanks for including those.
Yeah, I felt like it had to be done, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think at the time when you said you're writing a book, I think everyone assumed it was going to be some kind of joke book, which it turned out it isn't. It's a proper business book.
Yeah, absolutely. I do wear many hats. So a joke book was something that I was thinking about. But I can't give credit to creating any of them of my own. I do obviously do my research. I find jokes from elsewhere. So I don't think it would be, I think copyright would all be all over that, and lawsuits would be coming their way straight, thick and fast if I did write a dope joke book based on other people's jokes.
Well, probably best to avoid that then. And Amy mentioned there, Rick Yates. You've kind of reminded me. I ought to kind of get him on the onto the podcast. I've not seen Rick for a little while, but again, as someone that's sort of super well known in the industry and has helped a lot of people in their careers. So a great guy, and hopefully we can get him on at some point. Going back to the different sort of stages of your career, obviously you've made the transition from distributor to vendor in that respect. I mean, have you seen any significant differences there, or are there any differences? I've worked on the MSP side, and I've done the consulting side, and I work on the vendor side now. I've never kind of sat at the distribution layer. Is that a kind of different place to be?
I wouldn't say it's that much different, to be honest. The sales cycle from start to finish is still relatively the same. The only thing that does take a little bit more work is the journey of what your end user slash partner is about to face. That needs to be one hell of a lot more transparent than it would do from a distributor or an MSP level. So the vendor side of things, you just have to go through a few more hoops than you would usually, but it does normally mean that the actual longevity of the customer sticks around for a long time, a longer time.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Right, moving on to the next question, which may tie into the book because it's a fairly common theme. But I mean, what are the bigger challenges that you're seeing MSPs face in this, towards the back end of 23 and going forward?
It's quite a fine line, really. It's finding that right balance because obviously everybody just get carried away with trying to just get new business after new business. And if you look at any of the resources this day and age in marketing, it is all channeled towards just generating new lead after new lead. But my take on this is I want everybody to potentially take a step back a little bit, purely because there are many things that everybody can do with cross-selling and upselling into their existing audience that they're probably unaware could make a massive difference in not just their margin, but their MRR as well. So one thing that I've always liked to focus on is just making small, insignificant changes to the end user, but that have a massive varying impact on the outcome of any opportunity that a customer may be working with an existing service.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the book then as we get to that point now. It's called Sell More, Do Less. It's available on Amazon and all bookstores. I got mine from Amazon. Before we sort of dive into it, I mean, it's what we've all thought about writing a book. They say everyone's got a book in us, right? So, what was your inspiration for creating this?
For me, it's just purely to do with my experience throughout the years, having been involved in lots of different areas of the sales arena. First of all, with face-to-face selling in the retail environment, then over the phone in a telecoms and cold calling situation as well in a call center. There's many things that automatically try and carry themselves through one part of the journey into another. So when I actually walked into the MSP space, I found being an account manager, a lot of people naturally look at you for guidance and knowledge based on what trends are working for others. And based on some of the things that I just know off the bat because of all the mentors that I've worked with and all the things that I've studied over the years, I've personally had a dabble in psychology and sociology during college. So I love knowing all the reasons why people do things the way they do them and why we make those decisions. And understanding that a lot can easily be carried across from one to the other really highlighted to me that sometimes MSPs do get not carried away, but do get lost in the transition of knowing which way to go next. And as I mentioned before, with the resources all pointing towards spend more, spend more, and spend more. I just wanted to take a step back, focus on things that people can do simply and quickly, and that can obviously make a big difference in that outcome.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit about the book. I've read it and I've got a couple of little things I wanted to talk about. And I see that a very clever way at the end of getting the word count to where you wanted it to be, which was quite good. So let's dig into a couple of the bits that I thought were really interesting. And I'd like a little, maybe if you could maybe expand on them or explain them a little more. One of which was around a famous phrase, and you said people may or may not have heard it. I'd not heard it before, so I'm not sure how famous it is. And I'm also very, very nervous about saying it because I think part of this famous phrase is it can be interpreted in different ways. But the phrase that I've got, and I'm going to say it in this way, is I never said she stole my money.
Yes.
So what's that all about?
So it's more of a famous quote amongst linguists, where it's something that I picked up a few years ago when it was all to do with lead generation, how to actually approach your customer at the right time. Because we're human, we are sometimes led to choose the easier option. And in sales, that often comes in the form of an email. But what I like to stress is the fact that emails can easily be misinterpreted very simply just by reading something. Because in everyday life, we all have lots of different moods that fluctuate throughout the day. And we can take something based on how we're feeling in that given moment. So the saying, I never said she stole my money, is a perfect example as to how one simple sentence can be completely misconstrued seven different ways based on what word you want to actually highlight. So I never said she stole my money. Again, with that, depending on the word that you focus on, depends on specifically how that whole sentence is constructed. So I never said she stole my money. I never said she stole my money, and so on and so on and so on. And so what a lot of people have noticed have done in the MSP world is when life gets a little bit difficult, is to generate email after email after email. And so what I don't like doing is I like reversing that slightly, where I always try and lead with a phone call because very rarely the spoken language can be misinterpreted. And so I like to use emails after all of my calls to revalidate exactly everything I've spoken about. And it does make a significant difference in any of the conversion rates with the opportunities people are working on.
That's a very good tip and very interesting. I mean, I get a lot of emails, as I'm sure you do, from people pitching products and services that it's very, very, I mean, I just generally delete them. And I guess most people do. So, kind of having that actual real life conversation beforehand is sort of is super beneficial. But I know it's something that MSPs have struggled with. And I know that's probably what the book can help with is sales and sort of cold calling, picking up the phone. It's easy to send an email, right? So, I guess that's probably why people do it.
That's it, exactly. A lot of sales, the fear factor comes into the actual cycle itself. So they're all dependent on experience. It doesn't matter how high up you are in the chain, we all have a little bit of fear every now and again. And one of the best examples I can do is when you've had a big argument, obviously, with the missus, you walk out of the door, all of a sudden, all you do is contemplate everything that you should have said and should have actually spoken about. And that's your brain's way of obviously trying to tell you how you could have done things differently. And as soon as a potential no is on the horizon, it's sometimes easier for the average person just to avoid that entirely and avoid the disappointment. Think about the times when you see someone attractive at the bar and you're going over to ask them out. I know that day and age is gone now with all online dating, but you have to overcome the fear of rejection to kind of get better and understand that this is a process just like anything else, just like deployment with software. Sales is just a process from start to finish.
Yeah, but it sounds simple, I guess, like that, but it's a mindset thing, I guess, which is difficult to people to transition. But seeing it as a process is a great way of doing that. Another thing I wanted to mention, and this probably touches a little bit on the sort of psychology background that you mentioned, is around influential language, around trying to sort of phrase the conversation using things like would you be open-minded to that kind of thing for different phrases. Is that something that is sort of a powerful tool in the arsenal of a sort of salesperson?
Yes, absolutely. And we all use it in day-to-day life, especially when you go back home and you're trying to convince a partner or a family member to do something or a friend to do something that you might want to do. Think about all the times when you're trying to argue your point, you use naturally influential language to try and argue that across and actually to make sure that it's understandable and you reason with them and you actually make it transparent. And if that doesn't work, you try another alternative route. Again, sales is no different. There are certain things all of us can say on the phone that can make a really big difference in the outcome. And one of the things I noticed with a partner I was working with last year is he was really struggling to get customers onto either a demo slash a discovery overview. Obviously, the discovery call was to help him to highlight potential new opportunities and get some one-to-one time with the end user to actually excavate that call. But during his conversations, I heard him just leave too many doors open because he was teeing himself up for a simple no answer. Would you like this? So one of the things that I got him to do was just to change that message slightly and to say which day is best for you. Assume that the customer is actually happy to take this call and to choose the best one. You've handed the power over to the customer. They now have control of five options. There is a sixth option which they can still say no, but it's actually hidden away. But all five options lead to the customer, to the partner getting exactly what he wants. So we worked on that for over 3 or 4 days, and his actual outcomes when it comes to discovery calls booked went up fourfold just because he changed that simple sentence. And there's hundreds of different examples and things that we can easily control, just being aware of what you're about to speak of, that can make a big difference in how that message comes across.
Yeah, and that comes down to, I guess, the fear thing as well. There's so many calls I've been on where people are kind of, it's almost reluctant at the end, say, well, you know, would you like to, could you, have you got time to do this? And trying to almost giving the default option is no, I've not got time, I don't want to look at it. And that's kind of obviously the exact opposite of what you're trying to achieve on the call. So I guess that's a great skill if you can learn that.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%. And it's just being aware of everything in the background. So for instance, one of the books that I really do appreciate, which has really helped me with both of those situations, is called Exactly What to Say. And it's a very, very small book, only 150 pages, but it gives examples just like that, which can really help in your influential language. And what I've done is I've used them and found appropriate examples which can easily relate into the IT specialist and MSP arena, but also added some of my own where I've seen that success.
Great. Well, I'll link that book, Exactly What to Say, into the description below, so if anyone wants to check that out. Another thing that I was drawn to reading the book, because I've had many conversations with MSPs around this and with vendors trying to talk to MSPs around this and different opinions. And I think you call it kind of on the proposal side, there's sort of two or three tiers. We've always been told kind of, you know, the bronze, silver, gold system seems to work quite well, or red, amber, green, or whatever. The more different precious metals, we see it all the time in our world. When you're a vendor looking to sponsor an event, you've always got sort of platinum, titanium, gold, all kinds of different things. Where do you stand on the two or three tiers thing? And is the tier, some MSPs I speak to, they're quite adamant that they've got one offering, that's one product, which is, they're not kind of take it or leave it, but they standardize on one thing. Some have got five tiers, some have got four, some are bespoke, a la carte. I mean, what do you think is a good solution?
Yeah, I've always seen the most success comes with two or three tiers, just because it keeps the options simplistic and open. You can call them, as you mentioned, whatever you want: gold, silver, bronze, better, good, better, best, basic, standard, and premium, you name it. But having the three tiers in place keeps the actual selection really transparent, because obviously what you don't want to do in this situation is to really complicate the sales journey. Some of the products that we deal with on a day-to-day basis just do not relate to an end user in a completely different industry. So one of the power tactics that a lot of the partners I work with, not just in Ninja, but throughout my career in the MSP world, is to make things and packages simple for the end user to understand. When you start dissecting it, that's when they look to question it. So one of the things I mentioned all the time is, if you can present a choice to a customer, it gives them the power to be in control of which choice they would rather go with. If you're teeing everything up to a yes or a no, again, closed question versus open questions, then it does and can have a devastating effect if you're not on the ball. Of course, there's companies out there who do it absolutely perfectly, and I'm not here to suggest that to anybody that they should or shouldn't be doing things. I want them to actually understand where their areas of weakness that they feel are. And this is the reason why I've written a book in a situation that I have. I wanted this to be a pick up and go book. Every single chapter has got a different area within the whole sales cycle, from start to finish, from cradle to grave. And so I wanted people to pick up what they feel is relevant. But from my knowledge, one of the key areas of focus that I've worked on for many, many years is to focus on what I like to call the win-win-win choices, which is to give customers three options, two at a push, which allows the customer the control of power to be handed over to the end user for them to pick their fate, rather than feeling like they're being led down a one-way street. Because 20 years ago, unfortunately, there was a lot of power sales, which could be classed as bullying. You know, the aggressive manner of a salesman not getting off the phone. And we've gone completely from one end of the spectrum to the other, where sales now is about, it's all relational, and it's all based on that rapport that you're building with the customer. And in order for any decision to be made, I'm a firm believer that there needs to be three levels of trust. The first level is on you as a salesman or as a representative. The second is on the solution that you're offering or the package that you're offering. And the third is the company that you are representing. They're the three pillars of trust that you need to make sure are in place in order for a customer or an end user to make any decisions.
Yeah, I couldn't disagree with any of that. That all makes a lot of sense. And again, just to remind everyone that the book contains all of that stuff. So we've just talked about three very, very quick topics there. And the book is absolutely jam-packed, packed full of sort of tips and info on that. And some jokes as well, which is a nice little bit of something in between chapters. So moving away from your book, and you mentioned one there, the Exactly What to Say book. Are you generally speaking a book reader or a podcast listener or TV? I mean, what do you do to relax?
I do read a lot of books. Got that from the missus. She's absolutely mad. I like listening to podcasts. My favorite podcast is obviously Tate Talks is up there, very high up there. But another one slightly away from work is The Diary of a CEO by Stephen Bartlett. I do appreciate that. Something that I do follow, and I do like his work, and the guests that he has on are really, really influential. The book I'm reading now is a little bit away from IT, but it's called Breath by James Nestor. And it's about the potential illnesses which are relating to the type of breathing that you have, which is related to either mouth breathing or nasal breathing, and the underlying factors that could be a difference. So I'm a little bit of a out-of-the-box kind of bloke. I see what exactly picks me up at that moment and give it a go.
Yeah, it's quite an eclectic choice. But, I mean, Diary of a CEO has been mentioned several times actually on the podcast, so a lot of people seem to listen to that, although I'm familiar with it and maybe seen clips on YouTube and things, but I've not to date subscribed to it on Apple Podcasts, but I'll do that now.
Yeah, and that's the reason why I'm reading James Ness's book, because he was a guest on The Diary of a CEO talking about breathing practices.
Okay, so on to the next question. Obviously, it sounds like you've had quite a varied career background, but if you were starting again today, would you have done it differently, or what advice would you have given the younger Danny?
I wouldn't have done anything differently, personally. I've been involved in two acquisitions, which isn't for the faint-hearted. Sometimes it works out perfectly, sometimes it didn't. So that was something that obviously caused a lot of stress, but the mentors that I've learned and met along the way have been so powerful for me, not just in my business life, but in my personal life. And I wouldn't change that for the world. Obviously, I mentioned Rick Yates. He's incredibly influential for me, but also James Steele from Zen. He's another guy who I really appreciate and have done a lot for me, because I've come from a call center environment. I worked there for 6 years, and I probably seen, and I'm not just I'm not making numbers up here, but I probably seen at least 500 people come and go in 6 years. It's a very, very cutthroat arena. It's not something for the faint-hearted, and they train you into believing that you're not good enough. You know, the grass is never greener. And it was Rick's experience and know-how that persuaded me to take that leap, and it was the best decision I ever made, because if it wasn't for that moment, I could have been sat around for a long, long time. So when it comes to the younger me, I would definitely just stay as it was, but also just to have that belief in yourself, because I was a shell of a man 10 years ago. And so that's what I would give anybody else who's looking to get into a particular world that might be classed as new. Just try it, because the worst that can happen is nothing, and you can always revert to your knowledge and experience elsewhere if not.
Yeah, and that's a great way of putting it as well, that you know, you are where you are now, kind of super successful at at your role, but that's based on the previous experience that you've had, good or bad, that's kind of helped create the the person you are now. So yeah, maybe I'd be the same if I was doing it all again. I'd probably do the same. Okay, we're on to the final question then. You speak to MSPs all of the time. You've been doing it for years from Zen and Ninja. Have you got a tip that you would give to an MSP to help them with their business?
Absolutely, yeah. The one thing that I notice MSPs really do need to look into in a little bit more detail is the buying decision between logic and emotion. They need to be interconnected in to make sure anything is a really good business decision. Because otherwise, if you take an example, let's say everybody's got some kind of gym equipment in the shed, where there was a time where logically we know it's a good decision because we need to do something about it, but emotionally we're not connected, so it just gets left. So one thing that I always like to stress is a lot of MSPs, because they're technically minded, they like to focus on things rather than people. It's not because of a preference of one or the other. It's just they're more interested in that type of environment than people. And so when they're trying to sell and get their message across to the end user, there is a direct misconception sometimes when the features aren't aligning, because sometimes people don't want to understand the features and the benefits. Instead, they want to hear stories and reviews and case studies. And so what I like to do is to work with MSPs to actually help them to understand that there is and needs to be an emotional and logical connection in order for that buying decision to be made. And one of the best things that I always like to do is to get MSPs to tell stories and success reasons as to what other people have done. It's what we all like to do. We all like to believe that we're a shepherd when it comes to buying a decision, by making a buying decision, but we buy like sheep. I.e., let's say, for instance, you're going to book a holiday. You will never, ever find anybody who books a brand new hotel with no single review. Everybody will be drawn to have a look at what the pros are, what the negatives are. And so what I like to do is I like to relay that onto my MSPs to say it's no different in the SaaS world. Don't overcomplicate it and don't make it too technical, because the person that you're speaking to might not be in that same language where they're not too bothered about the things. They want to understand how it's helped other people and what it's done for their businesses.
Yeah. Again, another fantastic tip. It got me thinking there a little, because we do speak about a lot, and I think you mentioned it, that a lot of MSPs are technically owned and founded, at least. And then so they kind of, it's a technical person doing the sales in the early days. And then at some point they'll try and hire a salesperson, which is fraught with all kinds of difficulties. We see MSPs come across that all of the time. But do you think it's getting better? I mean, as vendors, I mean, with Jump Cloud and with Ninja and all of the vendors in the MSP space, we're trying to create tools to enable and MSPs to sell better and give them the kind of tools we need. I mean, do you think it's getting better, or are we scratching the surface, or is it still a big problem for sales for MSPs?
I think it's getting better offline. Absolutely. When it comes to marketing and resources, it's hands down one hell of a lot better than it was 5 or 6 years ago. However, it's still missed in that vocal phone call. Over the phone is where it can really have an impact. So one of the things that I like to do is when I'm talking to partners, I'm not making things up, obviously completely genuine. I like to re-emphasize that 60% of customers actually have found this to be incredibly insightful, and tell stories, because we're all built to be a little bit hesitant and to feel like sometimes if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So what I like to do is I like to relay the message to say, actually, I had another customer of yours exactly like this a month ago, and this was the journey. Let people know that what they're about to face has been done before and how it's proved to be successful. That will make the sales cycle for anybody looking to grow and cross sell much easier to come by, because it helps to relate that journey to the person rather than the thing.
Yeah, you've got me questioning myself now a little, because I really enjoy, and I do quite a lot of these podcasts and things, and I enjoy the conversation, the face-to-face and the actual chat, but 95% of my business communication is email or Slack, I guess, in terms of I very rarely pick up the phone and have a conversation, whereas I think I can definitely see that I enjoy speaking to people, but I don't know what it is, why I kind of am reluctant to make the call. But I think you're explaining this sort of significant benefits for kind of getting over that and doing it.
Yeah, and it's probably not something you're doing purposely. I think it's just because it's easier. Let's be honest, it's much easier to send out many multiple emails than it is potentially to have a phone call. But a lot of MSPs I've worked with sometimes not fail to notice, as that sounds a little bit negative, but sometimes get sidetracked with the fact that email threads can sometimes last days, if not weeks, whereas a phone call can last 5 minutes and you can get all the answers that you're after. So one of the things I always like to press with all of my partners that I work with on a regular basis is people still buy from people. And to really drill that down as much as possible to actually be human, because in order to buy something, you need to be likable. And that's where that phone call comes in, because otherwise, your email doesn't differentiate between the other 40 or 50 emails that that person's going to be receiving every single day. Whereas the phone call can stand out amongst everything. And this is one of the things that I like to obviously talk about at length.
Great. Well, I'll start to pick up the phone and hopefully improve that. It's a great tip. So, right, we're at time. Thanks so much for joining us, Danny. I'm going to, as I mentioned, I'm going to link to all of the books and podcasts you've mentioned, along with your own book, into the description below. I'll also put your LinkedIn contact details and things. So if people want to reach out, send you a joke, or whatever they want to do, they can do that. Or just follow you on LinkedIn to get a daily dad joke. I'm sure people would be interested in doing that if they're not already. But yeah, thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your day.
Oh, thanks very much, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure.
So there you have it. Thanks, Danny, for coming on. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I've put a link in the description below to the books that Danny mentioned, including his own, which is Sell More, Do Less by Danny Boyle. I've been reading it for a while, and it's a great book. I'd really recommend MSPs take a look at it if you want to improve your sales. And with that, thanks so much again for listening to Tate Talks. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell anyone that you meet in the street. Would love to have you all listening to the podcast. Until next time, goodbye.
This podcast has been very kindly sponsored by JumpCloud for MSPs. JumpCloud for MSPs provides managed service providers a platform for delivering modern IT services that are identity-centric, cloud-native, and vendor-agnostic. Using JumpCloud's Open Directory platform, MSPs can iteratively replace point solutions by unifying device, identity, and access management. To learn more, please visit jumpcloud.com/MSP or email the team at partners@jumpcloud.com.